Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Well, good morning. I'm Harry Miller.
Good morning. I'm Dave Kubikin.
And Dave and I are two of the attorneys. We're with the Herzog Law Firm in Corporate Woods. We also have offices in Saratoga Springs, Clifton Park, and Kingston, New York. And we are here each Saturday morning, some combination of the estate planning group, chat with you about estate planning issues, Medicaid asset protection planning, estate administration, wills, trusts, beneficiary designations, gift giving, titling assets, all those interesting things that people have questions about and need information about. So, Dave and I'd love to chat with you this morning here at Magic 590. You can be our first caller by picking up your phone and dialing us at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. So, how was Christmas?
Wasn't bad, Harry. How was yours?
It was great. Very quiet. You know, I think probably most people had a very quiet,
it, uneventful
Christmas.
It better be quiet, everyone out there, please.
Absolutely. Yes. It's just, we need to not go rushing out this morning to the day after Christmas sales. You know,
you're not doing all your returns.
It's like a thing of the past. It was actually in England, the day after Christmas in England was called Boxing Day.
And it still is Boxing Day, yes.
It still is Boxing Day, but originally Boxing Day originated in the late, mid early 1800s is the day after Christmas when people would box up gifts and take them to the poor, you know, who didn't have, you know, enough food and enough presents for their children. And then as everything else, it turned into a shopping holiday the day after Christmas. So
now it's people punching each other as they make returns.
Yeah, exactly. Rushing out. And I do read, I'd like to read newspapers, so there's a couple of London newspapers I read every day. This morning they were urging people to please stay home this Boxing Day, stay home, because things are, right now, they're as bad or worse there as they are here. So, anyhow.
Well, we're going to try to keep it positive, Harry. We were talking about this before we got on, and I said to you and Ben, I said, 4 days ago it was the winter solstice? And you said...
And I said, the days are getting longer.
Right.
Every day, a little couple of minutes, every day the sun comes up a little more. I love it. I look forward to December 31st because then at that point, the darkness begins to disappear, right? If you want to be positive, huh?
That's right. So, but Harry, you said the days get longer. And I always think when long days, that's a bad thing. I say the days are getting brighter, Harry. 2021 is going to, every day, next, whatever, 6 months or so, every day is going to be brighter than the previous one, and we got to have. Well, I'm not supposed to be preaching on the radio here, but I think
I'm suspecting
that attitude. That'd be a great way to be this year.
I'm suspecting you must have listened. Maybe you didn't, but I did yesterday. Going back to England for a minute, every Christmas Day, the Queen of England delivers a Christmas message, and I think. And hers, you gotta listen to it after the radio show, if folks, because you can pick it up on YouTube if you just Google the Queen's Christmas speech. It's only about 5 minutes long, and it's just so hopeful. And she talks about exactly what you're saying. She talks about light and how light does not only bring brightness, but it brings hope.
And it disinfects, you know, it cleans up
your
system.
It's like, and I said to my wife, I said, I don't know if anybody besides the Queen and maybe the Pope on Earth who has the ability to kind of inspire people. I don't think any political leader has that ability right now and anywhere in the world that I would put. But, you know, it's kind of nice, and it is hopeful. And I think looking forward, I think first of all, for a woman who's almost 95 years old, I think it's really remarkable that she's looking forward to hope and light. I don't know. So you're right, David. You're right. We gotta out with the old, in with the new.
Yeah, I feel like for the first time, and Ben, I'd love your take on this too. There is a, you know, no pun intended, a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel as well. And you could kind of kind of feel it around. You know, people hear about the vaccine and look, selfishly, I want to see people, Harry. I want to see people in our office. I want to go to seminars and stuff, you know. I kind of feed off mm-hmm. that. It's hard to do what we do when you can't make a relationship face-to-face with people.
Yeah, because we're in the people business. We're in the people. Estate planning, I think, probably as much or more than any other area of law, really requires personal interaction with a client. You really have to, you know, we're not just robots producing documents and you know, stuff like that. You have to really interact with the client. You got to get to know the client a little bit and particularly their family dynamics and stuff in order to develop the most effective estate plan for that family. It's not just cranking out another will or cranking out another trust. Each one is sort of custom tailored to meet the particular needs and issues, goals and objectives of the family. And that's, I mean, for me, that's one of the most rewarding aspects of practicing law. I've been doing this a long time, but, you know, I started out as a corporate lawyer, a bank lawyer. I did transactions. I did big real estate deals. And, you know, as a young lawyer, it's exciting to work on $100 million deals and stuff like that. It's, like, really neat. But, you know, it gets old after a while. And there's nothing more rewarding than helping a family figure out how to, you know, how to provide for a special needs child, how to set up an educational fund for their grandchildren and make sure that their money doesn't get, you know, wasted down the road and it's preserved for everybody in the most effective way. And, you know, I like that.
But it's not just estate planning here. You know, financial advising, I think the best advisors aren't going to be the ones that are just getting you the best rate of return. Certainly that's important, right? Being proficient at what you do obviously is terribly important in what we do in financial advising and, you know, doctors and so on. But, you know, to have some bedside manners to develop a rapport with your clients and kind of... be able to, you know, they ask you questions all the time. Harry, I know your clients ask you, well, what would you do, Harry? And they're not literally asking, what would Harry Miller do? They're asking you, what would you do if you were in their shoes? And you got to know what their shoes are and what it means. And you got to remember that they have two kids and they have a grandkid with special needs or they're not thrilled with their son-in-law or what have you. So you got to know all that stuff and they got to be comfortable telling it to you. And it just is a lot easier when we're all together, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, I think as the country begins to get vaccinated from this virus, maybe, you know, that will begin to pass. It's not going to happen overnight, but it does, as you said, seem like there's light at the end of the tunnel. And I think the encouraging thing I see is apparently people seem to be, now that there's vaccines available, people seem to be, if you read the newspapers, more amenable and more open to taking it and looking at it. There was a lot of initial suspicion and fear, I think, because there was a sense that it was being rushed through. But now, you know, it's kind of got a universal blessing now for not just in the United States, across Europe and things like that. And it seems to be, you know, cranking it out. So, you know, more the merrier.
Yeah, and Harry, look, I think it's, you know, eventually we'll start talking about estate planning here. But I think it's important. That, you know, not the youngest Speaker of the House ever, not the youngest Senate Majority Leader, not the youngest President-elect ever, mm-hmm. and the oldest of all three of those, they all got their shots. That does instill confidence in...
Right, and Dr. Fauci, I think he was the most important one. I think him getting it was, frankly, more impressive to me than any politician getting the shot, because he's not a politician. He's been saying that for months. He's a public health official, and all he cares about is getting us healthy, well, and back out and like doing what we were doing before. He has no political agenda other than to keep people safe and sound and well.
Well, Harry, I mean, he really was important, too, because he went to the North Pole and vaccinated Santa Claus. So it was really, really important that he...
I missed that, really?
Yeah, he went. He said he went to the North Pole and he vaccinated Santa Claus. So all the kids would be confident that he was going to be there, you know, Christmas Eve, Christmas morning.
Well, the important thing, Ben, is he's going to have to go there in 3 weeks to do the second dose of the vaccine.
That's right. That's right, to make sure Santa Claus is all right.
He's old. Santa's old. My God, he's in a high-risk group like me.
This is where I say you could be our first caller, calling 518-476-5900. Harry, until we do get a call, I thought we'd have some fun. I'd like you to take out the crystal ball you have in that second drawer of yours, and we're going to talk about 2021. And we're going to try to handicap a little bit what the next year may look like and what that means for estate planning and clients now trying. You know, a lot of times financial advisors do this. They'll forecast. This is what the first quarter, second quarter, this is what next year is going to look like. Let's do a little forecasting. I have not talked to Harry about any of this.
You've obviously never gone to the racetrack with me. Talk about handicapping. I usually lose all my money. But I'll give my best shot.
we're not going for the, to use a racing analogy, we're not going for the win here. We're just going for the show. Okay, top three. Okay, so, Harry, a lot happened, obviously, in 2020. And one of the things that I'm hoping, I'm crossing my fingers, leads to a positive result from 2020 is we've done a lot of document signings through iPads and through phones. And the governor, because of COVID, allowed us to do remote executions and notarize through video, witness documents through video. And I've had clients ask me, and I'm asking you now, so do you see in 2021 or shortly thereafter changes in the way legal documents are signed? You know, you could e-sign, you get an e-initial loan documents, but you can't do that for a will or a power of attorney. So what are your thoughts and what do you think?
I think so. I think it's starting. I'm hoping that we continue to have the legal ability to remotely notarize, and it's a structure setup. I mean, we're watching. We have to have a video hookup and watch people sign documents, but we can do wills remotely. And I'll tell you why I think. They talked about this a little bit last week. On December 15th, the governor signed a new power of attorney law, all right, which goes into effect 6 months, 180 days. So I think around June 15th, we're going to be revising our power of attorney, and they are considerably simplifying the methodology for signing it. They're getting rid of this gift writer that had to be witnessed like a will, all right? And if you have gifting provisions, you're going to put them in the basic document in the modification section. So you're going to have to initial it maybe once or twice, sign it in front of a notary, and not have to initial. That's going to save a tremendous amount of effort. To your point, the new law, that what they found out during the pandemic is that it was almost impossible for anyone in a nursing home to sign this complicated power of attorney form without having an attorney present. So they're now allowing, people can sign it, but guess what? People who are in nursing homes are going to be able to direct a third party to sign their power of attorney for them. Okay, and do the initialing if they can't write their name. And it makes perfect sense to me because you've been able to do that with a will for a long time, for, you know, 50, 100 years. If you're in a bed, in a hospital bed, you can't write your name, you can direct someone else to sign your name to the will in front of two witnesses, and it's a valid will. So why shouldn't he be able to do the POA? So I think we're moving in that direction. I don't know about electronic signing. The remote stuff is different because it's not electronic. That's a little more troublesome to me from a safety standpoint and not being able to hack signatures and stuff. But I think we're moving to the easier part of signing stuff. I hope so.
Well, you know, we're talking about powers of attorney. I never, you know, we'll lose an opportunity to talk about the power of attorney. The current form that Harry was mentioning It runs 14 or 15 pages typically in our office. And that's, you know, everyone jokes because it's literally called the short form. It used to be our old powers of attorney, Harry. I mean, you did a bunch of these, right? There are two pages front and back,
or
they're legal size sometimes, if you got them online or something. And there were a lot of powers people would give, not knowing what exactly it meant to give those powers. So New York, you know, they zagged and they said, you know what, we're not going to do two pages, let's do 15. Let's make sure you don't accidentally allow people to gift all your money away. And they, I think everyone would agree, at least in the legal field, they probably went overboard on it. Now it sounds like they're coming back to, a 7-8-page document that makes more sense.
Yeah, we're going to have to rework our own, and I think others will as well. The other thing that's important in the law is, before this, if you didn't use the absolute exact statutory short form power of attorney, a bank didn't have to recognize it as valid. The new law says, hey, if it's either substantially the same, or even if you use a different form, it's still a valid power of attorney if it's properly executed. You know, so we're moving away from some rigidity that was built in really for the last 10 years. I think this law, the old form that we were using, I think, went in 2009, 2010. So we've been, had this around for like 10, 11 years. So it's overdue for a change. But hopefully we'll wind up with a 6 or 8 page document instead of a 14 page document at least. And it'll be far more comprehensible to people.
I happen to agree with you, Harry, about the notaries. I think that's going to be one of the things that sticks. Certainly we'll notarize in person, but the ability to, especially people who, may light at the end of the tunnel here, but it's going to be a rather long time when unnecessary, commingling of you and me in a room, if it's not necessary, try to avoid it. There'll be a lot of that, and certainly getting together just to notarize a document is one of those events. I'll tell you, though, Harry, one of the things that will stick in terms of electronic is our webinars. We've been doing a lot of webinars this year, and that's something we're going to keep doing. It's a really easy way for people to get information. That's the whole point of them, is to be educational. The idea that we have our webinars available on demand on our website, www.herzoglaw.com. You can go right now to the blog page, and there's a whole array of actual webinars we did. They're quite good. They've improved over time, certainly, as we got used to talk to a screen and not people. We do have webinars coming up in January. The first Wednesday of January is January 6th. And at 10 a.m., we're going to be talking about aging in place. At 2 p.m., wills versus trusts. You can go to our website to register. You could also call our office at 518-465-7581. To either schedule an appointment or register for a webinar, or email us at info@herzoglaw.com. So, aging in place, Harry, that brings me to my next topic.
Mm-hmm.
Look in that crystal ball.
Okay, go ahead.
2020 not just had huge life changes, we had a humongous change in the community Medicaid landscape and how easy or hard it is to qualify. I'm talking about the installation of a 2.5-year look-back period for planning purposes. There's a 5-year look-back period for nursing homes.
Mm-hmm.
Those were all enacted before we really, really, really needed money, only when we really, really needed money. Now, with COVID and all the lost revenue, my question to you, Harry Miller, is what do you see happening to the look-back periods in the next year or two?
Whoa. well, we just put in the, I don't see any change there particularly. I'm not aware of any proposals. The 2.5-year look back just went in October, so I don't think, and that's being phased in.
Let me clarify more. Okay.
Sure.
New York changed the rules to make it harder to qualify because they would like people to private pay longer, essentially, and they don't want to spend state dollars on that kind of care, right? That's what it means to make it harder to qualify. The
right,
5-year look
right.
back.
Because the state doesn't have, they don't have money.
All it takes is one budget for the state to decide, hey, you know what, we really lost $10 billion, $20 billion during the pandemic, and we're going to make the 5-year look back period longer. we're going to make it that the home care.
Yeah. Well, they could certainly extend it. They could certainly extend out the 2.5 year to 5 year. That's for sure. And, you know, they're going to have to cut. I mean, I don't know what they're going to have to cut, but, you know, social programs tend to be among the first benefits to be cut when government is trying to, you know, gather dollars. You can't, you know, it's hard to cut education and, you know, all that other stuff. So it's very possible that over the next year or two, there will be a movement. There's always been a rumor floating around there that they're going to extend the 5-year chronic Medicaid out to 7 years for the look back. I don't know that certainly hasn't happened, but it has been proposed on occasion. And I think what that brings up is the importance of doing something now rather than later. As we always said for 25 years, sooner is better than later. And so, as is typical, for instance, when the new 2.5 year look back went in on October 1st, it didn't automatically go back retroactively 2.5 years. It only goes back to October 1st. So if you transferred a bunch of money on September 30th of this year, you're not going to be penalized for a subsequent Medicaid application. And in all likelihood,
at least for the
if
home,
they go to a 4 or 5 year period, they'll probably grandfather in the old 2.5 years. So at least you can lock in your penalty period now, rather than running the risk of having an extended penalty period a year or two down the road.
Right, and Harry, you're saying if I made a transfer when the rules were such, I should not be penalized because the rules changed to make that transfer.
They don't have to do that, but historically, when the state legislature in New York has, for instance, when we went from a three back in what was it, DRA 06, 2006, 14 years ago, when we went from a 3-year to a 5-year look back period, they didn't retroactively impose it. Anyone who was made transfers during the 3-year look back was still only subject to a 3-year look back, not a 5-year look back.
Right.
So if after that you put in more money, the new money was subject to a 5-year look back, but it didn't affect the old money that was only subject to the 3-year look back. And so that's how the legislature has done it. I mean, frankly, they could do anything they want. They could make it retroactive. No. But it angers voters and people who've done, like our clients, people who've really spent time learning about these things at our webinars and bringing in their family to analyze their estate plan, and they've gone to the trouble and the expense and the effort of doing this, and then all of a sudden the governor and the legislature wipes it all out. That makes voters upset, and the last thing politicians like is upset voters, because they tend to vote for the other person. So,
yeah. Well, there's going to be one of those rubber meets the road type of things here, because I don't think it's that hard to see the future that you know, a lot of money was lost, and you're not going to eat twice tomorrow because you didn't eat a month ago when out at a restaurant, right? So there's going to be something that's going to come down the pike. I think it'll be a combination of changes to the Medicaid rules to make it harder to qualify. And Harry, to your point, the earlier you plan, the better. I think this is absolutely the case, Harry. I know I'm not reporting news. This is opinion when it comes to estate taxes, which is the next topic.
No, well, that's a difference. Yeah,
right. Well, obviously, we have federal estate taxes. I'm more worried about New York State, because that currently is the lower threshold, just under $6 million that you could transfer during your life and at death without any tax implications, or at least
correct
tax implications. I know a really easy way to make a lot of money in New York State, Harry Miller, and it's to lower the estate tax exemption.
To move to Florida, yeah. save. Yes, well, and let me just say this. At the federal level, let me tell you, the Biden administration's proposal on estate taxes is very simple. They want to ratchet it back to $3.5 million. That is in the Democratic, that is in their platform. All right. It's currently $11.58 million index for inflation. I just looked up this morning. On January 1st, it's going to go up to $11.7 million per person.
And Harry, that's, That's per person.
Per person.
Federally, you could actually, for all intents and purposes here, you could combine your exemption with your spouse's.
Right.
Through something called...
So a married couple, next year, on January 1st, in 6 days, a married couple can pass almost $25 million, $23.4 million tax-free to their kids or anybody else. Okay?
And so the new administration...
You don't have to worry about the excess, okay?
Harry, so the new administration is saying they'll still keep portability.
They will keep portability. Yeah, and that's a huge for people who have a lot of money. Okay, and from a planning standpoint, let me say this: this is only maybe two, but the IRS has already announced that there's not going to be a clawback provision. All right, if that happens. So what it means is people who are very, very wealthy could transfer $10 or $20 million now, use up their unified credit exemption equivalent under the gift tax law, and not have it clawed back if it goes down to $3.5 or $7 million. Okay? So for very wealthy people, there's going to be a lot of planning going on in the next year. There just aren't that many, that's a handful of people. But, for anybody out there who's got large wealth, that's coming down the road. And frankly... it's hard to say whether or not.
I'm more worried about New York, Harry. I'm more worried about New York.
Okay, that's okay. New York could lower its estate tax.
They could go nuclear, Harry. They could press the button and they could.
Well, we were at a million before this happened, right?
It's a million. or two and a half. And so people out there understand, well, that's a lot of money. I don't have that kind of money. What the estate tax pie, what's part of your estate tax, includes everything from life, or could include, right? And usually does, everything from life insurance proceeds to retirement proceeds. To your property, well, it's in a trust, not the kind of trust that's going to take it out of that pie in most instances. And when we have usually the second death, and I hate to talk this way on a Saturday morning, Harry, but, if I passed away, okay, right now, that means that my wife gets a lot of money through life insurance and now has real estate and retirement. And you add these things up, and the further downstate you live, or the nicer the neighborhood you live in, right? The value of real estate can be huge chunks of this. And if it does come down, it will generate revenue. It may not impact a lot of people, but it will generate a lot of revenue, and it is a planning aspect, something I definitely think is going to change. You're going to hear more and more stories about it. Certainly, it's not happening tomorrow. But the point is, of all this out there, just plan ahead of time. So that way you get that retroactivity, you get that grandfathered in, if that's going to be available to you. And certainly when it comes to that look-back period, which I'm extremely concerned about.
Well, I think we'll have. I mean, listen, even up here, listen, you got a person who's got, let's say, $500,000 in retirement accounts, and they got a $300,000 house, and they got $250,000 of life insurance, and $100,000 in a bank account. Well, guess what? That's over $1 million. And people say, oh, I don't have that much money. Well, no, the insurance isn't real money until you die. Okay, so you're not going to receive the benefit of it. Okay, and people don't think of their retirement accounts as real, but it's taxable. That's the problem. What your taxable estate is a lot different from what you think your net worth is. So this is why planning becomes extremely important in an environment where tax laws could change dramatically in the next couple of years. And governments across the country have experienced such enormous outflows of cash that they don't have enough money to pay the bills right now. So, that will generate some. They're going to have to look at additional sources of revenue. And, taxing wealthy people is one of the easiest ways to get reelected. Okay.
And gentlemen, we are at the bottom of the hour. We're going to take our break right here. We'll be back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and Flatbush Road in Kingston. Our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And good morning and welcome back. I'm Harry Miller.
Good morning and Merry Christmas. I'm Dave Kubikin.
Dave and I are two of the attorneys. We're with the Herzog Law Firm. We've been talking to you the last half hour about, looking forward into 2021, quietly putting away 2020, a year to forget.
For the most part, Harry, look, grandkids were born this year, and people got married this year in smaller and smaller ceremonies, of course. A lot of good things happened.
Everything had to change. Weddings changed, funerals changed, christenings. I had a friend of ours whose daughter had planned a large wedding and wound up just having, you know, her immediate family and her fiance's immediate family, and they call it? They entered into mini-money.
Well, Harry, it's my... too much information out there, but my son is 1.5, and we haven't done his christening yet. And the joke was that by the time we do it, he'll just walk in and change himself, and... What are we doing here? And then...
It's true.
Thanks. Yeah, and walk himself, dress himself, and by the time we're able to do it, what are we going to do, guys? Right, make the best of it, and try to learn what we can. And you did mention you could be our first caller at 518-476-5900. We do encourage the calls, but Harry, there's a lot for us to talk about 2021 still. We talked about document signings. We talked about estate tax issues that may come up or changing Medicaid regulations based on a need for revenue in the state. I've seen an uptick, and I don't know why this is. I've seen a lot more probates. I've seen a lot more probate fights. And I don't know if this is just something that comes with... perhaps there are more people passing away. I don't think that's the case. That happens all the time. But I'm seeing a lot more fighting, and I wonder if you're seeing that as well. I'm wondering if emotions are running high and that's what it is, or there's less and less getting together and communicating. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on the state of probate and how there seems to be a little more fighting, or at least that's what I'm seeing?
I think one of the things I've seen over the last 5 years, maybe a little longer, but more increasingly, is I'm finding a lot of some families are of a mind to treat. There's a difference between fair and equal in distributing your estate. Equal is equal, okay? If you got three kids, everybody gets a third. Fair may not be equal. And I think what I'm seeing among people as they think about things and talk about things is, you know, in all families, you know, some kids pay more attention to the parents than others. Some may just live across the country and not be able to. Others live down the street and see mom twice a year. But among families, there's usually one or two who participate more in
helping
mom and dad act as they get older, as they need more assistance, you know, because home care starts in the family, you know, to the extent you have family around who can do it.
that's where, and this is, you know, as you get into 2021, it's really important, making a New Year's resolutions this coming week. Look at your parents. Look at your parents and or your aunt or, you know, and see what kind of, how are they functioning? Are they, you know, are they eating good food? Are they just eating microwave frozen dinners every night? Are the bills getting paid? Is there a pile of mail sitting on the table that hasn't been opened in a week? You
got to
stay on top of these things? Yeah,
Harry, I was going to say, sorry to cut you off here. This conversation you're bringing up is the precise one we used to have every radio show between Christmas and New Year's. Why? Because people are at mom's house, right? They're back home. They're looking at the table. There's bills on the table. They're listening to this radio program because they're on an uncomfortable pull-out and pull-out bed. And so this is exactly what a normal radio show would be like when you were traveling and getting to be at mom's house more or the whole family's together. But yeah, please go on.
This year, the problem is this year they may not be with mom and dad, okay? They might, because of Zoom, because of COVID, they might have decided not to come to see mom and dad this Christmas time because they don't want to expose them if they live in Washington, D.C., or if they live in Florida. They may have decided to stay home and do a remote Christmas. So it becomes even more difficult because you can't open the refrigerator and find out there's no food in there, you know, or there's spoiled food in there. You know, you can't look in the hamper and see if there's, you know, a month's worth of dirty wash that hasn't gone in the washing machine yet. But somehow or other, excuse me, my throat's bothering me this morning.
Well,
somehow,
you know,
you got to try have this conversation.
I was just going to say, Harry, this year, while I promised that it was 12 months and it will end up being 365 days, I don't think all years are equal. And this one, I think, has aged a lot of people a lot more than just a single year. The social contact, that's so important. Emotions and the chemicals in your body that react when you see a smiling face and you are around your friends.
Harry and David.
Especially as you're getting older. Yeah.
I hate to jump in here, but we have our first caller. We have Richard in Germantown.
Good morning, Richard.
Yeah, good morning. How you doing? I have a question for you, Ed. It might not pertain exactly what you're saying, what you're featuring today, but I like you guys. You sound very knowledgeable. Quick question. My nephew is on SSI. He's a little mentally impaired, you know, handicapped. His mother passed away recently and willed him her pension. Is he going to be able to keep that, or would he's on SSI? How is that going to work?
Richard, I'll just jump on this real quick, Harry. You mentioned it was willed. More likely, she named him as a beneficiary to the extent that...
Yeah, exactly.
And so he's going to be getting that income, and that income isn't dependent on whether he is on or off SSI. But that means he's earning income. And if his income's high enough, yeah, it could affect the benefits he's receiving. I don't know the specific programs he's on, but certainly income is income. Now, in every other situation, or most situations, income is a really good thing. And even when you're paying lots of taxes, income is a really good thing because you still get to keep 75 cents of every dollar. Here, income becomes a little more difficult. And this is why special needs planning is such a big thing, because what it seems like a benefit to anyone else actually could be a detriment and affect the services he's receiving. I can't tell you one way or another if it will, without all the specifics, and we shouldn't talk about
that. One thing he might want to look at, or you might want to look at, is there may be some way in which he could take the excess income and put it into a special needs trust, all right? So to the extent his income or his asset level exceeds the SSI limit, it might be possible for him to set up a special needs trust and have it go in there so it wouldn't affect his SSI benefit. I think that would be worth, a conference in the office here to talk about that, because we've done that in other situations. It depends where the income's coming from. We have to have a lot more information we can talk about on the radio. But, you know, the other benefit of SSI is he's also, if he's on SSI, he's receiving Medicaid.
Right.
And he may be dual eligible. He may be receiving Medicare and Medicaid. But the Medicaid is income and resource related as well. And so we don't want him, if he has medical needs or he has a lot of medications and things, we don't want him to lose, you know, the medical benefits of that either. So, but there's a lot of special needs planning that we could at least talk about, and it might make sense to preserve those federal benefits.
Yeah. Yeah, he's getting about, close to $1,000 a month SSI, and the pension is $1,600, so... You know how the state is.
He may lose because he has to recertify his SSI, and at some point that's I wouldn't wait too long to have that conversation.
Right.
But, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Very well.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for your call.
Yeah. Thank you.
And we have our next caller. It's Carol in Schenectady.
Good morning, Carol. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you guys for providing this service. This is excellent.
Oh, thank you.
I would like to know your opinion about long-term care insurance, whether it's worth the money, whether it's worth the service that you get, your opinion on that.
Sure, Harry. I feel particularly equipped to handle this because my parents have long-term care insurance, and it's often been a discussion I've had with them. A lot of people think, Carol, that you got to choose a road, and you're going to do a trust, or you're going to do long-term care insurance. And I'm pro plan, whatever a plan is that's right for you. The negatives that come with long-term care insurance are that it's insurance, so there's premiums every year, and you pay those premiums like you do for your car insurance, whether or not you get into a car accident. That's how insurance works. So there's this idea, well, if this event doesn't happen, was this the best use of my money to pay these premiums each year? And the answer typically is, well, what are my other options? And so I tend to be pro-trust and pro a certain kind of trust called a Medicaid Asset Protection Trust, but that doesn't mean I'm anti-long-term care insurance. I think it serves a great purpose. I don't know, you know, how expensive it is these days for people and how it will fit into people's budgets as they age and have fixed incomes. But the idea with it is that we're going to use that money along with our own income, the long-term care insurance payouts, along with our own income, to cash flow our long-term care needs. And in general, the lower our need level, the easier it is to have an affordable policy and have some coverage. And I'm thinking things like, well, I'm going to be in a $4,500 a month assisted living one day, a small long-term care insurance policy, you know, paying $100, $150 a day for you. That's great. Now, the policy that covers you in a nursing home is going to need to pay $450 a day. So those tend to be a lot more expensive. Of course, devil's in the details, and what's right for you isn't right for someone else, and so on and so forth. But it's really worth a longer conversation about all the other parts of the picture to see if it makes sense.
Well, in my experience, someone I know had long-term care insurance, and when it came to a time when she needed it, she needed help with AIDS during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the long-term care insurance setting in, they sent her a choice of three aides, and they could hardly speak English.
Mm-hmm.
It was something that the family decided they didn't want.
It wasn't a good fit.
All that the long-term care insurance would provide, and they were upset with the quality of the aides that they were getting for paying that kind of money in long-term care insurance.
Right. Yeah, we've heard that before. We've heard, you know, wonderful experiences with it as well. You know, we don't want you to rely on a bad experience solely to help you decide. You know, when you do trigger your policy, it's not just a snap of a finger. There's something that they've rebranded, Harry. It used to be called an elimination period. In most policies, it still is.
But yeah, it's usually 100 days.
100 days, yeah. You're on your own. To pay, and when it comes to nursing homes, that could be a lot of money, 3 months of a nursing home on your own. You know, if you have a bad taste in your mouth, then likely the price tag that comes with it isn't going to help the situation. It is an option, and you know, we're again, Harry, like I said, we're pro plan, and I understand why my parents have it.
It's great. I think, you know, home care can be a little problematic with these policies because, among other things, in order to qualify, you have to at least need two of the five activities of daily living. And most of the policies require that you use aides from a certified home health care agency. Okay, so you can't just go out under the long-term care policy and hire your own aides. They'd have to be with an agency, and you know, these agencies are very short-staffed, and many of the aides are not as well trained as they probably ought to be for the kind of money that you're paying for your policy.
Exactly right.
I think it's, but you don't get to pick. You know, the problem with the agency is, you may not get the same aide every morning. You know, if you've got somebody coming in from 8 to 12 for your mom, you may have a different aide every day of the week. You don't necessarily have the same aide. That's a problem throughout the agencies. I don't know that it's related to the insurance so much as the agencies don't have the adequate staffing to provide you with a regular stream of people. I don't know that there's much of a solution to that. The agencies are... But that's what you have to do. You can't just go out with a policy, I don't believe.
Certainly the problem in this case where they had no choice about who they got. The long-term care insurance sent them three aides from a nursing home.
Yeah, well, that's unusual. That speaks to maybe not a really great policy that they had, because usually once you qualify for the care, you would. I mean, because like Dave, my mother had long term. She died a number of years ago, but she had long term care insurance. she lived in Pennsylvania, and when she needed aides, my wife and I interviewed the agencies. Okay, we didn't have to. The insurance company didn't tell us which agency we had to get aides from. We picked the agency, and we interviewed several agencies. Now, we didn't get to pick the aides necessarily, but we had really good luck with the folks that took care of my mom. But I'm a little concerned about the fact that the insurance company was picking the agency, because all they're doing is reimbursing you or paying the agency directly. So I don't know. I'd have to look at the policy. And that's the problem. You're talking about long-term care policies. You really got to know what you're getting, okay? And you got to, if you don't understand the policy yourself, it's really good to have somebody like us review it for you, you know, rather than just the insurance person who's selling you the policy.
Exactly.
Because there are a lot of variations in these policies. They're like Tavis's English muffins. There's lots of nooks and crannies in these policies. and you can get, you know, you can some things provide one thing and other provide something else. So
it's really a loaded question because there's so many
details. Sure is.
there's a lot of choices, too.
In the long term, I think long term insurance is great. You have to be able to afford it. It's not cheap, but really, if you get the right comprehensive coverage, I mean, for instance, long term care insurance will cover assisted living. There's no Medicaid plan that covers assisted living facilities. And frankly, that's far preferable to a nursing home for most folks.
Right.
Yeah, you know what? I'll leave it at this. And thank you so much for your phone call. Opened up the door here.
Wonderful, that you provide.
No problem. You know, when it comes to long-term care insurance, Harry, when it works, it works. And when it works, man, mm-hmm. that's fantastic. The issue is what's the likelihood of needing it compared to the other options available. And the reason why I particularly, and you know this, why I like the Medicaid Asset Protection Trust is mm-hmm. because even if you have long-term care insurance, Harry, you still need an estate plan. You still need to figure out who gets your money. You still need to avoid probate. You still need to deal with icky situations in your family or charitable requests that you want to do. The long-term care insurance has nothing to do with that, right. And it just so happens the Medicaid trust can do both plan
well,
for the
because
future
it's more
as well as estate plan.
It's more than just a Medicaid trust. I mean, that's just a name we call it. an estate plan is just that. It's just like, it's not like, oh, I have long-term care insurance, so I don't need any of this other stuff. Yeah, you do. The insurance will cover the financial obligation or some of it, but you still don't want to go through a probate process from a standpoint of cost, and as David was saying earlier, from a standpoint of a family feud. You know, if your sister's getting an extra $100,000 because she took care of your mom, you know, that doesn't go down too well with a lot of people if they're not aware of it.
Harry and David, we have another phone caller. We have Tony from Schenectady.
Hey, Tony, how are you?
Good. Thank you for taking my call. I have a very good friend of mine. Her name's Mary, and she lives in a group home. Her mother passed away last year, and she went to this group home, and they have all her funds in control over her funds. We've been talking about getting married, and her father left her a considerable amount in her trust to her and her brother. And, I'd like to marry her so I could get her out of that place. And am I allowed? We're both on Social Security disability. Am I allowed as her husband to take over her trust and oversee her trust?
Well, certainly that's a very open-ended and important question. And so the answer is obviously we need to see these documents and know all the particulars of what's going on. We really appreciate the phone call. It's probably better suited for a phone call in the office or an appointment rather than to talk about on the radio. Certainly things are possible. Being a spouse creates certain rights, but in order for you to be able to act on behalf of someone else, unless the trust gives you certain powers, which I don't think it would, we need powers of attorney, and we need people like your possibly future spouse choosing to name you as an agent, so that way you can help her with transactions, including things dealing with the trust, perhaps. So we look forward to you calling the office so we could talk more about it. Thanks for the call. So, Harry, we were talking right before this very good call. And so, quick thing about trusts that I don't think people may understand. It's really difficult to talk about a specific trust, Harry, when we're on the radio, because there are so many provisions that can impact, what the answer is. For example, you mentioned the Medicaid trust, right? It's called the Medicaid Asset Protection Trust. I joke all the time. The word Medicaid is not in it.
No,
the word Medicaid is not in the trust.
Never appears in the trust. It's true. It's just a name. That's all. It does protect assets from having to be spent on long-term care and home care.
Yeah.
But it isn't limited to Medicaid. It is basically an income-only trust that avoids probate, that sets out the terms of the trust and the income distributions to you during your lifetime. And this Medicaid trust is actually the functional equivalent of your will, because it says to the trustee what the trustee is supposed to do with your money after you pass away. So.
That's right.
There's
four paragraphs here.
Through there. Yeah, go ahead.
There's four paragraphs of our trust that if you did not know you were looking at a trust, you would think you're looking at a will. Because it's the who gets what, when do they get it, how do they get it. Absolutely. When I do mention to people that my parents have long-term care insurance, I also mentioned they have a revocable trust because they need to take care of their estate plan. So they chose to go with two options, the insurance as well as a revocable trust. And what a lot of our clients choose to do is actually combine those into this Medicaid trust you're talking about.
Right. Mm-hmm. You can do that. And you can convert a revocable trust to a Medicaid trust. And there's, not a heck of a lot of difference, tell you the truth. The main difference being that in a revocable trust, you can act as your own trustee. If you set up a Medicaid trust, you'd have to resign as trustee and appoint someone else in your place, because otherwise it wouldn't protect. It would still be a trust. It would still avoid probate, but it wouldn't protect your assets if you wind up in long-term care at some point. So those are the kind of little details that we have to. But, you know, in the course of these things, we also build in a lot of control. So you have a lot of indirect control over the trustee and what they do and the information that they provide to you. So, you know, it works out well for a lot of people.
I'd say it does. You know, if you're sitting there saying, wait a minute, hold on. There is probate, there isn't probate. What's probate? What's the will? What is all this? Lucky you, January 6th. Harry, January 6th.
Yeah, what? Wills versus trusts?
2 p.m. January 6th.
Everybody says, hey, I have a will. Why do I have to go to probate? I have a will.
Well, go to
wills have to be probated, right? Wills have to be probated.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah. On January 6th, we're going to be doing our first webinars of the year, 10 a.m., Aging in Place, 2 p.m., as I mentioned just now, Wills versus Trusts. They're all on demand, so if those times don't work for you, go to our website, herzoglaw.com, go to the blog page and click on the webinar you'd like to watch. We could send you slides as well. We would love to have you at the live webinar, though, 10 a.m., Aging in Place, 2 p.m., Wills versus Trusts. And they'll be followed by webinars later on in the month as well. And you can call our office either for an appointment or to register for one of those webinars at 518-465-7581 or go to our website and go on the seminar page. Again, it's herzoglaw.com. So, Harry, we're talking about a quiet Christmas. I'll tell you, Santa came, and he delivered big time this year. Jackie, as it turned out, was
your kids are at that age when Christmas is just such a delight. All you do is, you know, sit there and watch them open the presents, and, you know, it's the best gift you could ever get, right?
Yeah, my son was just playing on the boxes, not even opening up the boxes. He was just hanging out, having a good time.
Right. I remember that. Those are wonderful years of the kids there. And what is it? Jackie is what? How old is she?
She's seven, and she wrote to Santa, and she got, well, I think she got everything that she asked for from him. The reindeer ate a lot. We were hoping there would be snow on the ground, Harry, Christmas morning, so we could see some footprints from the reindeer.
You have reindeer, don't you, over there where you are?
We do, but there was no snow, so we couldn't prove anything other than they eaten carrots.
No, they live over, I'll tell you what, they live over at Albany Rural Cemetery. Dave and I don't live too far from Albany Rural Cemetery, and the deer in the winter come across from the cemetery and kind of graze in our backyards from time to time.
We're gonna remember the good moments of this year, Harry. I know you are as well.
I am, and so y'all make your New Year's resolutions on. I mean, the next time we talk to you, it's going to be 2021, right? This is the end of the year.
That's correct.
And this is the last Saturday of the year. So we will. When we're back next week, we will wish you all a happy New Year.
Take care.
And have a great New Year's. Bye bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.